tempted to say, give me patience. Right? Now, have you heard that said, give me patience? You hear people say that? Maybe it's a Welsh thing, is it? No. No, it's general, is it, around the world?
It's always stronger
words. Well, is it? Yeah. Give me patience. It often indicates a bad attitude. But actually, it might be taken to indicate pretty good theology. Because if we have to rely on patience coming from within ourselves some days, that's not going to be, it's not going to work. And actually, Scripture's teaching us that patience is a fruit of the Spirit and it comes from God. See, you can tell people to be patient as much as you like without effect. It's one of those things like, calm down, dear. It's going to have the opposite effect, isn't it? Be patient. It's not going to work. It's going to have the opposite effect. Now, being patient, like being calm and a host of other things, it might be good to be, but it's unlikely to get easier by having somebody tell you to do it. And you tell yourself you should be patient. Because God is gloriously patient with you, but this thrashing yourself over the matter won't make it any easier either. It's a leading characteristic of our God. He's got it. And he gives it. He's got it. He is patient as a leading characteristic of who he is. His patience with his people is beyond legendary. But it doesn't come easily at all to our human fallen nature, does it? It's not natural to us. It's natural to him. So for Christians then, it grows on Christians as the fruit of the Spirit, who, being God, being gracious, possesses it naturally, and he grows it on those who are grafted into his vine. Here's how it works for us. It's as we're grafted into him, as we draw on him, as we live our lives with him, that we grow in patience. You're not an air plant. See those wires on the screen, on that picky on the screen? Those wires have got plants growing on them. Would you believe that?
I thought there was somebody being a mug spreader.
Yeah, he's come straight out of the mug spreader and hit the wire because he hasn't controlled the lid on the hydraulics. Yeah, absolutely. Looks like he's flung down high. But actually what you've got is a plant that's got no roots in soil. It's in the air. You will not suck this patience out of the air around you, folks. It doesn't live there. You're not an air plant. You're rooted because you're grafted into a vine. And you're drawing on that vine which has patience in himself. And it's as we draw on him, Christian patience grows rooted in God, buffeted by its environment, but strengthened to deal with that patiently as we draw on our root stock for strength. It's growing in drawing strength and leadership from God in a number of ways in response to tests of that patience. Waiting patiently, drawing on the root stock, on the vision of our God for strength. Did anybody see the thought for the day? See, if you were using Facebook on your phone, you might have seen the thought for the day. 2 minutes.
So here I'm at the top of this hill this particular day, in the peace and in the sunshine, sound of a distant tractor, and the sound of these cattle taking great lumps of grass and ripping them off, trapping them around their tongues. They do with their tongues. It's amazing. How strong is that? Don't you ever try to take a lump of grass with your hand and pull it out? It's quite a hard job. If you come over here by these trees, you'll see that this one has actually got its head on top of a branch and ripped a branch off a tree that stands up to some terrible storms right at the top of this hill. It's just put its neck on it and leaned on it and ripped it off. You can see the sort of stress and strain these trees at the top of this hill are going to be taking. And it's just taken its head and ripped a branch clean away. I don't know what you think about it, but I reckon this girl's got a bit of a guilty look on her face of what she's been up to. It's not bothering her though, she's still cracking on with the grass underneath. There's a tremendous vision at the beginning of the book of Revelation, Revelation chapter 1, verse 8, where God says, I'm the beginning, I'm the end, I'm the Alpha and the all, and the Omega, the Almighty. Now, for a day of trouble, that's a pretty big vision. If I was ending up in a bit of a ruck, I'd want these cattle on my side. I certainly don't have to go up against them in a straight fight in the middle of this field. But it'd be great to have them on side. How much greater would it be to be going through the days of trouble that we naturally experience in the course of our daily lives? We were with a dear family yesterday going through just such a difficult, difficult day when words fail you. What matters on days like that is not a vision of lush pastures and beautiful countryside, but a vision of the God who is the beginning and the end, the one who was, who is, and is to come, the one who is almighty and is not against us, but is on our side fighting for us, fighting for his people. What matters in days like that is not the things you can say, but the vision of God upon which we rest. I hope you've enjoyed the vision of this beautiful bit of countryside, but it would be great if today we can lay hold of the vision of this God, the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, the one who was and who is, and whatever has happened is still yet to come. There's a future plan. The Almighty, God for us. Have a great day.
Basically, the way patience is built in God's people is leaning on that God and drawing down on him through days of trouble, through days of challenge and difficulty. It grows in drawing strength and leadership from God in response to various tests of patience that come our way. And what you find is that we have one word for this in English. We use the word patience, right? But if you look at the biblical evidence, you've got a range of words in the original in Greek. And those relate to the sorts of trial against which this patience works. Does that make sense? The Greek words define it in terms of dealing with the sort of thing that you need it to deal with. It's in that tension. So the language there is recognizing that patience grows in response to difficult days and leaning on that God in those days. So patience in the New Testament is like a many-stranded string. It grows in response to different stimuli, different sorts of stimuli. And the one thing that is patience, they think of as a response to different sorts of times of trial and trouble and difficulty. Let me try and illustrate what I mean. Our word patience comes from a Latin word, not a Greek word. It comes from the Latin word patio. And that has nothing to do with gardening or barbecues and everything to do with suffering, right? Everything to do with suffering, it means I suffer. I suffer. But the Bible has a range of words that we always translate patience, which reflect different responses to different forms of testing and trial. So that unitary word then, patience in English, coming from a Latin root, translates a set of Greek words to describe the right response to a range of situations that call it forward. So patience becomes a many-stranded rope, a response to different things, but one response to them all. So you get the word macrothumia, right? It means being calm, not irritated, under provocation or in misfortune. You get it in Galatians 5:20, you get it in James 5:10, the passages that underlie what we're doing today. Anexikakos, not angry at difficulty or upset by it. Ephesians 4:2, the sort of life we need to live, being described there, and Romans 2:4. Tropophoreto, extensive pulling up with someone. That never happens, does it? Acts 13 speaks of God extensively pulling up with his troublesome people. Stego, putting up with annoyance or difficulty. 1 Corinthians 9:12, 1 Thessalonians 3:5, Romans 9:22. Cartereto, persisting in a bad situation. That's patience, isn't it? Just another aspect of what we understand with the one word you get in Hebrews 11:27. Hupomone, enduring, keeping going in difficult circumstances. There's a thing Christians need. wouldn't you say? 1 Thessalonians 1:3, 2 Tim 2:10, and 2 Tim 3:11. Enduring, keeping going in difficulty. And those things paint a picture of what actually is contained within the one word we tend to use, this word for patience. Lowe and Nider have written a Greek-English lexicon with reference to semantic domains. It is heavy reading. It's quite a thing to look at. And they've got an interesting comment in there, because they say, well, they're doing their stuff so that the Bible can be translated into all sorts of different languages, telling what the different words in the Greek mean in different contexts. And they say this, it's portrayed, this idea of patience is portrayed in other languages in some interesting ways. To remain seated in one's heart. That's great, isn't it? Something happens, and instead of jumping up, you stay seated in your heart. To keep one's heart from jumping, a threat, a crisis. Patient, calm, stay seated in your heart. To have a waiting heart. That's a good one. That would be good, wouldn't it? Would you like to have a heart that's good at waiting? I'd like to have a heart that's good at waiting. So those sorts of ideas they're coming up with. And they say this word macrothumia that we're looking at in Galatians 5 and in James 2 means a state of emotional calm in the face of provocation or misfortune and without complaint or irritation. So Hebrews 6 talks about the prophets who took all this provocation and trouble and grief and talks about their patience. For patience, consider the prophets as an example of suffering and patience. James 5:10 sees it as patience formed in the face of suffering. Galatians 5 makes it clear that this is patience formed in those difficult experiences by keeping in step with and living by the Spirit. Do you get that? It's formed in bad experience and not necessarily by it. Because it could be completely frustrated in the bad experience. But it's formed in bad experience by drawing down on the resources of God. It's the gale blowing on the hilltop against the tree that's exposed that makes it draw all the more strongly on the supplies of its roots and that builds the strength and resilience of that tree. So the thing itself is desirable. We all want to be patient. Wouldn't we like to be patient? How do you get there? You get there through the problems and the trials and the difficulties you don't want to have by drawing down on God in those experiences. So, if it's the fruit of the Spirit, where's it grown? It is quite cheerful, really. But it is grown through growing patience while suffering mistreatment and abuse. Now, the range of words we've got in the Greek, they take this in those different contexts. We grow in patience through suffering, mistreatment and abuse. Are you good at suffering for a long while, the mistreatment of others, without growing resentful or bitter? I don't know, don't put your hands up. Because that's not an easy thing, is it? The King James Version translates macrothumia as long suffering. And that's the sort of thing this is driving at. Paul stresses the need for long-suffering in the life of the believer. 1 Corinthians, he raises it 3 times, particularly to that internally troubled church in the 13th chapter when he's talking about what love is like. It's long-suffering. Puts up with abuse and mistreatment for a long period of time. It arises in the list of, obviously in Galatians 5, this list of the fruit that's produced in the life of the believer. It crops up in the description in Ephesians of the life that's worthy of God's calling. A life that's long-suffering. Paul stresses it to the Thessalonian church. A church that grew out of persecution. Do you remember? It was born into persecution and rioting. And it seems to be something he recommends his own ministry to hostile people with as well. Consider my patience in the face of these trials. So how do you do that? We want to do it. How do you do that? What do you say to yourself when you suffer mistreatment and abuse to make sure you grow this fruit of the Spirit in response to it rather than becoming bitter in response to that? Notice, please, by the way, that you grow this fruit. You don't get this fruit growing on you out of nothing. That's for airheads and air plants, right? They're the ones that grow out of nothing. We grow out of things that we consider and reflect upon. Am I making sense? Have we got that? That is crucially important. It doesn't come out of nothing. It doesn't come through sitting and contemplating a navel. It comes out of conscious reflection on what God feeds us with. Conscious reflection on his truth. Because we're not air plants, we're rooted in him and the truth about him and how we relate to him. So what are you preaching to yourself as you're being abused, as you're suffering mistreatment? God is just. God is the judge and he does justly. Now, it's fine to say that on a day like today. It's more difficult on a day when you need to say it to yourself, isn't it? Have you noticed that? 1 Peter 2:23 attributes the way Jesus did not retaliate or threaten when he was insulted and made to suffer. He attributes it to the way that Jesus chose instead to entrust himself to the God who judges justly. Do you see what he's saying? How did Jesus go through all that abuse and blasphemy and stuff against him? How did he do it? He entrusted himself to the God who judges justly. And therefore patiently went through it. 1 Peter 2:23. And in Romans 12, Paul is pleading for a life of sacrifice in response to God's mercy, which he's been talking about in the chapters before. That God has saved people. And he says this, do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone. Right, get this. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, and he quotes Deuteronomy, it is mine to avenge, I will repay, says the Lord. Can you trust him? Can you trust him to do that? Whoa. That's the challenge where patience grows. In his excellent book on the fruitful life, Jerry Bridges, again, you'll hear me quoting him a lot. One of the thoughts that most disturbs a suffering Christian who has not learned patience is this issue of justice. Can we trust God to do justly? And if you're going to grow the patience that the Lord showed and it's the fruit of his spirit, we need to learn to cast ourselves on the justice of God. Live by faith there. Depending on him to be what he says he is. And drawing down on his spirit to give us the trust in what he's told us to do that. Growing patience, suffering mistreatment and abuse. Growing patience, responding to provocation. See, we talked about mistreatment by others, where we are powerless to respond, basically. But provocation stimulates a response that we do have the power to make. You see the difference in what we're saying here? We've talked about where you can't do anything about it, you're suffering mistreatment and abuse. Now we're talking about when you're being provoked and you can respond. How do you do that? This is where the actions of others arouse anger, a desire for retribution. We're in a position to retaliate. We're being provoked. It's like poking a stick into an ant's nest, isn't it? It's trying to provoke a response. So when we exercise patience in the face of provocation, actually what we do is we directly imitate God's response to ourselves, because God could be provoked by us easily every day. Exodus 34. Moses cut out two tablets of stone like the first. Do you remember what's happened? Moses has been up on the mountain 40 days, 40 nights with God, given tablets, comes down, and there's, of all people, Aaron leading the people in a jolly dance around a golden calf, offering up sacrifices to some idol. And he smashes the tablets in his fury and his anger and his frustration. Moses has been provoked, let alone God. And Moses cut two tablets of stone like the first, and early in the morning he went up to Mount Sinai, just as the Lord had commanded him, and he took in his hand two tablets of stone. And the Lord descended in the cloud and stood with him there and proclaimed the Lord by name. And the Lord passed by before him and proclaimed, "The Lord, the Lord." What's he like? A compassionate and gracious God. This is what he's like. Slow to anger. Abounding in loyal love and faithfulness, keeping loyal love for thousands, forgiving iniquity and transgression and sin. What's he like? That's what God's like. He shows patience in the face of provocation. And so when we're provoked and we need to deal with ourselves, what do? We tell ourselves the truth about him and look to the Spirit of God living in us to give the strength to us to respond similarly. Slow to anger. That's what we need to learn from him. If we're to grow in this patience. Not being an airhead or an air plant. How do you feed all this? You do it by meditating frequently on the patience of God to us. And you might go to the parable of the unforgiving servant in Matthew 18. You might remind yourself of what we're taught there. We're like the unforgiving servant when we lose our temper with the people who choose to provoke us, ignoring God's extreme patience with us. Meditate on his justice when abused. Meditate on his patience with us when provoked. And seek him for the strength of his Spirit working through you to make that response on the day. How do we grow patience? That's how we grow patience. And we grow patience in tolerating other people's shortcomings. This is hard. How easy is it to tolerate fools gladly? How easy is that? Here's where patience grows. Under that pressure. In that situation, in that difficulty. So in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "You've heard that it was said to an older generation, do not murder. And whoever murders shall be subject to judgment. But I say to you that anyone who's angry with a brother will be subjected to judgment. And whoever insults a brother will be brought before the council," and get this, "and whoever says, fool, will be sent to fiery hell." Sneering remarks about the stupidity, ineptitude, or intellectual failings of others, they all run counter, according to Romans, to the doctrines of grace and salvation, as the outworkings of grace and salvation. Those doctrines must result in our bearing with the failings of the weak, Romans 14, verse 1 following. What's happened in grace and salvation is that God has borne with us who are weak and who do stupid things. It's a parable of the unforgiving servant, almost again, isn't it? How can you be slow in tolerating fools against that background? So Paul in 1 Corinthians 4:7, he makes it absolutely clear that whatever gifts or abilities we possess are things we've not earned, but things that we've received as gifts from God. Again, bearing with one another in love is crucial to Christian community as we strive to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. That's a reference to Ephesians 4. We grow it, though, not as it's dropped on our head from a cloud, but in response to its being tested in experience, as we have to deal with fools gladly. Growing patience, tolerating the shortcomings of others. So Colossians 3:12 following pictures it like this. "Therefore, as God's chosen people," because you're special, "holy and dearly loved," because he set that measure of love on people who are not wise, "clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." And in case we haven't got that message, he spells it out then in verse 13 of Colossians 3. "Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you has a grievance against someone. Forgive as the Lord forgave you." Patience grows, tolerating the shortcomings of others. And you only get this as you give time to letting your thinking be moulded by the Spirit, as you feed your brain with thoughts of how God has been patient with your folly. Meditate then on his justice when you're abused, because that'll help. Meditate on his patience with you when you're provoked. Meditate on his forgiveness of your failings when you're surrounded by those you might be tempted to see as idiots. Grow patience, tolerating shortcomings. Ah, here's a good one. Here's a good one. Here's a searching one. Growing patience while waiting for God to act. I'm sure you're all far better than I am at waiting quietly for God to act, right? It's not easy to wait for God to act. We become frustrated and, oh boy, patience is not easy in that context. I have to say, frankly, I'm not good at this. And many honest men amongst us might say the same. One of the most faith-shaking things in Christian life can be having to wait patiently for our God to act. So Abraham had been promised a son with Sarah, but he couldn't wait. So he went and slept with her slave girl, and the result was trouble and grief that runs down to this present day. Saul, another one who wouldn't wait for Samuel to come and make the sacrifice, rushed his fences rather than wait for God's timetable, and for this he forfeited the kingdom. Both men lost faith in the faithfulness of God and couldn't wait. There's a problem. By contrast, David waited patiently for the Lord, who heard his cry, turned to him, and lifted him up out of the slimy pit, out of the mire and the clay. He set my feet on a rock and gave me a firm place to stand. Psalm 40, verse 12. So the cure for this impatience with God is trusting yourself to him in faith, but not in a vacuum. In a real life situation where you have to do that. To wait patiently for God. The trouble is this real doubt in his faithfulness that crops up in us as we're trying to wait. You need to think over the known faithfulness of God. Consider the way he's always kept his promises. Determine to obey his will, consciously entrust the results into his hands because he has been faithful. And in that time of waiting, learn that patience of waiting for God to act. See, here's what we do. We rely on him for the strength to be able to do these things. So we meditate on his justice when we're abused, on his patience when we're provoked, on his forgiveness of our failings when we're having to deal with the shortcomings of others. And we meditate on his historic faithfulness when waiting for him to act. We know what he's like. He will act. Where do you get the strength from that? You draw that down from the Spirit of God, because how else are you going to do it? And it grows on you like a fruit. How do we get patience? Finally, persevering through adversity. Again, Jerry Bridges says that endurance is the ability to stand up under adversity. Endurance. Patience has endurance, you see. Perseverance is the ability to progress in spite of it. Now, did you get that bit? Because perseverance in a race is not a matter of dealing with the pain. It's a matter of going through the pain barrier and keeping going. On the course. It's not thinking, actually, this bit of course is uphill, I think I'll choose another bit. It's keeping going on the course that's been laid out, isn't it? And that's the thinking. And Jerry Bridges suggests that whereas long-suffering should be our patient response to people who mistreat us and provoke us, endurance and perseverance should be our patient response to difficult circumstances that try us, and yet we keep going. On the course that's marked there. There are two interesting associations made with this word for endurance and perseverance in the scriptures. Frequently the idea is linked to hope, and frequently it's linked to suffering. So in each of the four instances where Paul speaks of perseverance and endurance in Romans, the context is always of the future hope. And then in 1 Thessalonians 1, 2 and 3, Paul writes, "We always thank God for all of you, continually mention you in our prayers. We remember before our God and Father your work produced by faith, your labour prompted by love, and your endurance inspired by hope in our Lord Jesus Christ." endurance doesn't live for now. This sort of patience doesn't live for now. This sort of patience lives for then. It's inspired by the hope that we have in Christ. And the present experience of the early stages only of an endurance race, according to Hebrews. We must run it with perseverance, with our eyes set on what lies beyond the crossing of the line at the finish. Current adversities get put in their proper place by this reflection. We're going somewhere. We're going somewhere. And that's why this is happening. What's happening? This is the second association. Sufferings associated with his patience and endurance. Jerry Bridges is really blunt, but I'll let you have it anyway. I've warned you in advance, haven't I? Endurance, he says, can be produced only under stress, whether physical or spiritual. So David's been up here this week, and one of his very happy posts on Facebook was about he'd been out doing training and he'd been doing some huge amount of hill reps. Now that's where you, as far as I understand these things, that's where you ride up a hill and then you come down it, only to ride up it again. Up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. Reps. The only place to build endurance is in hill reps, in his sport. Is in keeping on. Is doing that. Under stress. So, Paul says to the Romans in Romans 5, verses 2 to 3, we boast in the hope of the glory of God. Says the hope. Not only so, but we also glory in our sufferings. Hello. What? Because we know that suffering produces perseverance. There you go. And perseverance produces character, and character produces hope again. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Isn't that interesting? Is a neat feedback loop. We persevere because we hope, and perseverance produces character, and character produces hope. And again, James tells us, James 1, 2 to 4, consider it pure joy, this is in the Bible. Right? I wish it wasn't. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, when you endure trials of many kinds. Because you know the testing of your faith produces. Yeah, this stuff we're talking about here. Patience is perseverance. Perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work, so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. Obviously in terms of your faith. See, we all want these qualities of patience. We all want this quality of endurance and perseverance, but we don't have to walk by the Spirit through the experience of adversity that produces them. And that's understood. Christian character, Christian patience, Christian hope and perseverance are forged between the hammer and the anvil of the life we have to live through this veil of tears. As we tell ourselves the truth about God, the truth about the situation, relying on his strength to live by that. So as we go through these adverse experiences, as we do so in fellowship with the comfort of the one on whom we lean, the Spirit of God, patience is produced through adversity. As we meditate on his justice when we're abused, on his patience when we're provoked, on his faithfulness with our failings when others fall short, on his historic faithfulness while waiting for him to act, on his sovereignty, planned out future hope while persevering through this difficult veil of tears. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, fear no evil, because you are with me. I guess you're ready for a conclusion and you're hoping it's going to be short. It's tough stuff, but it's useful stuff. Where do we get this patience from? Give me patience! Yes, that's correct. God gives it to his people. We get it from God. That's where we get it from. But how do we get it? From being with God, living with him, abiding in the vine, keeping in step with the Spirit, as we pass through the troubles and trials of this world in all its fallenness, as those who trust him and pursue him to glory. I'm going to give the last word almost to Jerry Bridges, who says this. Trials always change our relationship to God. Either they drive us to him or they drive us away from him. The extent of our fear of him and our awareness of his love for us determines in which direction we will move. They'll move you. Which way? Yep, that's okay. But just one more thing. This patience comes from God when in these circumstances we do walk with him. And that is the case because he is an inspiring personality. And being with him is to be made patient like him through this stuff. It's all about having him rub off on us. It's a fruit of his spirit, not a work of the flesh. And you only do that by walking with him and thinking on him through a lot of rubbish in a fallen world. If this podcast has raised issues for you, or if we can be of help, please contact us through the website www.ergroup.com. That's ygrwp.com. Thank you very much for listening.